Off the Ball.
In association with Air. Don't miss live and exclusive Premier League action this month on the Air Sport Pack.
This is News Talk.
You're welcome back. It is Thursday night, so John Giles is with us in studio. You can get your texts in to 53106 and we'll put them to John a little bit later in the show. Evening, John.
Evening, Nathan.
So we're midway through the group stage of the Champions League. Five English clubs involved this time, 15 games played, and they haven't lost a game as of yet. After what you've seen over the past week and over the campaign so far, are there signs that English football is closing the gap on the continental clubs again?
I think there probably are, Nathan, because I think maybe when you talk about the big clubs, you're talking about Barcelona and Real Madrid and Bayern Munich. And I think those three clubs have actually slipped down a bit. So that obviously opens it up then for the Premiership clubs, or any other club for that matter. But we're interested more or less in the Premiership clubs. So, you know, I don't think Real Madrid is not as they were, or Barcelona, or Bayern Munich. So it definitely does open it up for the bigger clubs. And the results have been good for them, haven't they?
Yeah. Well, you know, and some of the performances as well against the better teams.
Yeah.
Spurs in midweek going to Real Madrid, coming away with a 1-1 draw. And seeming to have a slightly different system. They went with Llorente, who rarely starts, but played up front with Harry Kane. Obviously, they're missing Dele Alli through suspension. But suddenly seems to give Spurs a totally different edge, because we've become very used to watching a certain style of Tottenham play. Do they need that? Do they need that alternative that puts a doubt in the opposition manager's minds?
Well, I'm not so sure about that, Nathan, because, you know, Dele Alli is very, very good when he does play. And, you know, they have that forward striking force all the time. I think where they lack actually usually is in midfield, because Dyer and Wanyama's not playing at the moment. But Eriksen doesn't actually play in midfield. So I think they're very good at the back. I think they're very good at the front. But I think when it comes to really big matches, they lack a bit in midfield. And my theory on Wembley is that, you know, I think White Hart Lane suited them better. Because when you've got Dyer and Wanyama in the middle of the field, the last thing they need is space. When you go to Wembley, the space, they don't know how to use the space. And you'll find that teams that come to Wembley do know how to use the space. And I think that accounts for a lot of the poor results at Wembley. See, White Lane was more compact.
Yeah.
So Dyer and Wanyama would be in getting their tackles in, right? But you have to be able to use the space as well. And Dyer is what we call now the holding player. Wanyama's not far behind him, that's it. So they're not going to be creative getting on the ball. So the space is no good to them, whereas the space is good to a lot of the opposing teams that they're playing.
He did try a couple of times last season, Pochettino, of playing Dele Alli deeper and playing him as part of that two in midfield alongside Dyer or Wanyama. I know Dembele can go in there as well, but would that be a big change? Has Dele Alli got that capability to play?
Not really, I don't think. I think it's always good for a striker like Dele Alli, who plays off Kane, off the main striker, to come deep, because it's much more difficult, and contribute a little bit in there and then get it behind the ball into the box. But they have to get into the box, so you can't be in two places at the one time. They can only help it a little bit, but it's up to the midfield players who are the genuine midfield players to do what's needed to be done in the middle of the field. Dele Alli or anybody can be a little bit of a help, but they wouldn't be able to compensate for a lack of creativity in the middle of the field.
What did you make of Manchester United over the past week? There was the scoreless draw against Liverpool, which maybe was, many people predicted, a pretty forgettable encounter, and then grinding out a 1-0 in Benfica. The way Jose Mourinho set up in that game against Liverpool, was that exactly what you would have expected?
No, didn't expect it at all. I think Mourinho has been a very, very good defensive coach, and I think he's got a bad reputation in many ways to be a defensive coach. He actually defends better than most other teams, but I was very disappointed in him and Manchester United in the Liverpool match. Actually, in that particular match, the approach was very, very defensive. Very defensive, because Liverpool, we know, are at their worst when they're being attacked. Now, one of the things that I think, anyway, he played Young on the right wing, for example. I think Young was there mostly to stop Moreno attacking. Right, so it depends on how you look on things. A lot of other managers, myself included, would say, I'm delighted Moreno's playing. We can go and attack him because he is a weakness, rather than making him a strength and bringing Young in to stop him attacking. So it depends what way you approach it. I thought he approached that in a very defensive way. And if you're talking about a test in the season, like a couple of weeks ago, we had a test between Chelsea and Manchester City. And Manchester City had flying colours, the result in flying colours in that. I think Manchester United, with this test against Liverpool last week, actually failed miserably in the match. See, people say, well, you know, it's typical Mourinho, he goes away to get a point. Well, why would he want to go away and get a point? Why couldn't he get 3 points in it? I think Liverpool, by the way, I thought Liverpool played extremely well at the weekend. I think it was given to them in many ways because the initiative was given to them, didn't have to create anything from the middle of field, and they were very good and balanced in the midfield. Manchester United had one shot on goals in the 90 minutes. And De Gea, don't forget, had to make a miraculous save to stop it. It's a very risky thing if that's what he was trying to do. And I think his attitude to it, I've never seen Mourinho being that negative before in the match. He's always defended well, and which is great. But even with Chelsea, in his good, great years with Chelsea, played well. But he always scored goals as well. They always scored enough goals to win matches. So I always thought he was overly criticised for being defensive in his approach. I think he defended extremely well, but was prepared to attack. Whereas against Liverpool, I don't think he was prepared to attack at all in the match. So it's a hugely negative approach to a team that hadn't been playing well and could have been knocked out of it. Because Liverpool, as we know, are not good at the back. But they didn't have to, they hardly had to defend on last weekend.
Mourinho's defence after the game was that Liverpool were playing three in midfield. They were playing Henderson, Chan and Wijnaldum, and that by keeping it tight, Klopp would eventually have to sacrifice one of them and put on a fourth attacker. Now, Klopp never did that, which meant United really came out of their shell.
He didn't have to do it, though, Nathan. He didn't have to do it.
But Liverpool didn't win the game either.
Huh?
Liverpool didn't win the game.
No, but they played much better than Manchester United did on the day. I mean, we're talking about the approach. I mean, what he said after the match was I couldn't understand what he was talking about, where he said, I didn't have the bench to compete against these midfield players. Well, he had Mata on the bench. Rashford wasn't on. Lindegaard wasn't on. So was he talking about physical strength? I don't know what he was talking about in that sense, that he couldn't match Liverpool in the middle of the field. I mean, Liverpool in the middle of the field have never been a great threat to anybody else. They were a bigger threat because they had more room to play on, and they were given the initiative to do it. They were handed the initiative. So I don't understand Mourinho's response to the fact that Liverpool dominated the game, especially in the middle of the field. He seemed to be talking about size to me. Pogba didn't play, Moreno, all my big fellas didn't play. Well, I think that's nonsense.
On the Moreno situation then, would your preferred route to put somebody like Rashford out on the right-hand side and you have Moreno on the back foot all the time? Or actually, are you happy for Moreno to wander into your half as much as possible, catch him out of position?
No, Moreno is very, very good going forward. He's very good going forward. So the last thing you want to do is encourage him to go forward. Where he's very, very poor, actually, is when he has to defend. So the obvious thing to me is that you've got to put him under pressure where he's at his weakest, which is defending. You don't set out your team like Young to mark Moreno, what I thought was happening, to stop him playing. I think it's a different way of looking at it. I think it's the wrong way of looking at it, because Moreno is not a good defender, and that's proven to be the case in Liverpool matches, that he's caused them goals. But if you say, well, I'm going to put him on to stop Moreno coming forward, then you're not going to put the emphasis on where they're weak. And I'm surprised at Mourinho doing that, because he's usually very, very clever in what he does. But I didn't think he was clever on the weekend. I think Manchester United got away with it. I don't think they played well at all. And again, this is from a manager who, a few years ago, when he was at Chelsea, actually criticised people that came and parked the buses, they say, at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah,
but that's Mourinho. Anyway, he's full of contradictions in different ways.
And this is a pattern that didn't just start this season. You look back over last season as well. I think it's one goal in their last 9 away games against top 6 teams for Manchester United. And there was quite a bit of conversation about Romelu Lukaku after the game, because you look at his statistics against the better sides as well away from home, and they don't compare, say, to Harry Kane. He did have that one chance, but really struggled to make an impact. Was that again down to what was going on behind him?
I think
him?
So. It was around him. I mean, Lukaku is not he's not a Messi or Kenny Dalglish in his day. He's a big fellow up front that needs an awful lot of support. He's not going to be doing an awful lot on his own, and he was isolated, and he's not able to do that. you know, he's a big, strong fella, but he's not able to hold the ball up, and he's not a classy footballer by any means. He is what he is. But if you're talking about him in the other matches, he did score a lot of goals against the other teams, more so than he did last year, against the weaker teams. I think Liverpool, you see, was the first team in the top five or six that he played this season. So Liverpool haven't been one of the great teams that you go and say, right, we're going to shut up shop and we're going to do this and we're going to worry about Mourinho. Now, the teams that have really caused Liverpool trouble are the teams that got at them at the back. And that's a fact. But Liverpool, I thought, actually played well because they weren't put under pressure in where they're normally weak. They were actually in their strong element all the time. I thought Manchester were lucky actually to get away with a draw at the weekend.
So it was almost the opposite of what Mourinho was claiming after the match of Liverpool not going for it. That was nonsense. Here was a Liverpool side who struggling with a little bit of confidence. You know there's issues at the back. And if you want to go and be champions, a real opportunity to go to Anfield.
Well, that's the way I would think. That's the way I think it should have been approached. Now, what he was saying afterwards was, well, Liverpool didn't do this and Liverpool. Liverpool actually didn't win the match, but they were trying to win it. There was no parking the bus or gone. I mean, the midfield players were good. I thought they were very good. They'd one of their main players, Mane, was out injured. One of their top strikers was out injured. But they actually dominated the game. And De Gea's save was sensational. That would have made a big difference. But, you know, managers always give you peculiar answers after a match anyway. But I thought Mourinho's response to the game just didn't make sense at all.
Liverpool, we spoke last week about creating chances over the last 2-3 weeks and around the international break and not taking them, and sort of a similar situation on Saturday, but Tuesday night, 7-0 win away from home, granted against Maribor, who didn't put up much of a resistance.
But sometimes, is
that all you need as a player, that it just clicks on one night and you have to take the momentum?
Well, Liverpool particularly, because Liverpool are all go, and on certain days they will look extremely well. Now, what actually, Klopp was a little bit off too when he said, the previous couple of matches, he was emphasised we're not taking our chances, right? But the emphasis should have been we're conceding too many goals. It wasn't as if they were creating loads of chances in it. I mean, I think the last match that he said that on was the 1-1. I don't know who
Newcastle.
Was it Newcastle, right? And he said he concentrated on, you know, Joe Bloggs missed a chance, which he did miss a couple of chances. But the goal they conceded was awful. So what do you do with a well-balanced team? The forwards commit loads of chances, but if they score enough, one, and the defence does his stuff, you still win 1-0. I mean, you go back over the Liverpool team and the Chelsea great teams over the years, loads of matches 1-0. They didn't take their chances, but they didn't concede a goal either. I mean, the goal against Newcastle, remember the ball through from Shelvey, knocked two defenders out of the game, and you're a bit lucky to score. But that should never have happened. In other words, the defenders can still do their stuff, right, and concede no goals, even if the forwards are not scoring. There's a balance to it. And Liverpool and Klopp was saying, no, it's mainly due to we're not taking our chances. Actually, it was the other way around. We're giving too many goals away too easily.
Do you think Klopp's behaviour on the sideline affects his players at all?
No. No.
That when he's jumping around, when they miss an opportunity?
I don't think it inspires them, and I don't think it does any harm to them. This attitude now that the manager's doing what they're doing actually is... They must like doing it. They think it helps. I know as an ex-player, when the manager's doing what he's doing, you don't even see him. And more importantly, you don't even hear him. Right? You know when you see them shouting and running up and down the bench and maybe a lot of sports think, oh, they're inspiring the players. Well, in my experience, it doesn't inspire you at all because you have to do what you have to do on the pitch. And they're talking about their enthusiasm, right? Which is fine. But... Now, I'd be old-fashioned in this way, and I know people regard me as old-fashioned. But in my opinion, in watching a match, you should watch the match, and you should take in everything that's happening, in every position, and that takes concentration. Right? Now, if you're running up and down the touchline, and you're throwing your arms up in the air, and you're jumping up in the air, and you're doing that, you're not in control of the situation. You have to miss things when you're doing that. A perfect example would be, and I was trying to do it as a player. And when you score a goal, right, people always say, you can be at your most vulnerable, right, when you score a goal. And you'd have to say, well, why would that be the case, right? Because when you score the goal, everybody's celebrating, da-da-da-da-da, and that celebration is still going on when the other team kick off. Many times have you seen it, where they go straight from the kick-off, because they've switched off. Now, I try to encourage the same as a man myself as a player. When you score, immediately start thinking about defending from the kickoff. From the kickoff. Because what happens with the two centre forward scored a great goal and they tip off. But now it's different because it goes backwards or it can go back. It goes forwards a minute. They wouldn't bother. They're so high on it that they don't start their defence from there. Because everybody thinks we've scored, it's great and that. There was a great one a few years ago. Do you remember the one at the World Cups? I think it was Croatia, was it? They scored in a match. They scored in injury time.
You could see it straight after.
The coach was on the pitch and they were all jumping on the pitch, right? Instead of the coach keeping cool, you see, what you got to do as a coach is keep cool. Under any circumstances, keep cool. See what's going on. Direct it, right? Now I think if you're jumping, running up and down the touchline, you can't be doing that. So if you go back to that Croatia match, the coach was on the pitch jumping on the players. I think it was against Turkey. I don't know who it was against. Anyway, they kicked off and they went for the opposition went straight up the pitch and scored again. Game over, 2-1. You have to concentrate. This is where Keane was great, right? Keane was a leader in that way because Keane didn't get carried away with anything. That's his personality, right? So he'd be, there's a crankiness in him, which was very good as a professional footballer. Another, don't take anything for granted. Don't be running around, jumping around. Don't get start. As soon as that kickoff starts, now you're defending again.
Yeah.
You're concentrating on the game. And that goes back to the managers running up and down the pitch. Players, to be honest, don't see that. They're too busy in the game. And when you see a player shouting on the pitch, I know from my own experience, when there's so much noise going on around the stadium, you don't hear what the manager's saying. You just don't hear it, right? So all the running and jumping and da-da-da, it's great for the crowd.
Yeah.
And the manager probably enjoys it as well. But I think the manager should be concentrating, not be getting excited. He shouldn't be getting excited. Because the players, he's directing the players all the time. That's my opinion on it.
Get your texts in, 53106. We're going to take a very quick break and we'll continue after the break with John Giles.
Off the ball.
In association with AIR, watch 35 live European Rugby Champions Cup games this season on the AIR Sport Pack.
This is News Talk.
You're welcome back. John Giles is still with us. 53106 for your texts. We'll get to some of them in a moment. I was just talking about managers' behaviour on the sidelines. When you were a manager, did you ever lose the run of yourself on the sidelines? Was there moments where the emotion overtook you? Or were you always able to keep calm?
What do you mean? I'd get annoyed with the referee or something, but I wouldn't be. You wouldn't be running on the pitch, and you wouldn't be. See, you got to keep your head all the time under any circumstance. You keep your head.
Did you take notes while the game was ongoing?
No, I can't understand the notes the managers are taking now.
So Brendan Rodgers would spend.
Loads of them do. I felt if I have to take notes, I'm missing something. But if something important enough happens on the pitch, you should see it and remember it. Which I could. Now, I'm not patting myself on the back.
Yeah.
But I could. If you were the right back and you were in the wrong position, I'd remember that. Because it's so important that it's in my head, I remember it. And that's when the coaching comes. That's one-on-one with the coach, with that right back that does it. Not just a general coaching session. You have to nail where it's at. Right, so I'd be too busy watching the match than writing anything down, because I've seen lads writing down, heads down, and the match is going on.
Well, also it looks as though Brendan Rodgers is going in, and he's not the only one, but is going in with 10, 11 points to make at half time. If you're just keeping it in your brain, in your memory, you're probably just remembering the three main points.
Exactly. You can't cover everything at half time. You'd be three or four main points that you'd be covering, and then on Monday, then you cover the other points with the individual players.
Mm.
See, I used to do it on an individual basis, because you can put on a coaching session, you see, for 16 players, right? But you don't get to the heart of the problem. Say the right back is in a bad position every week and you're putting on a session on Monday and you don't address him, then the coaching doesn't mean anything. And also what I can't understand, and really drives me mad, again, I'll be old-fashioned, substitutions coming on. And you have the fella with a big... Must be a list of things. Do you ever see them when they're coming on the pitch?
Where they need to be for the set pieces or who they're meant to man mark.
I don't know what they're doing. Do you know what they're doing when they're doing?
My understanding is that they have...
You don't know for sure what they're doing.
Well, it could be different for every manager, but some of them certainly it's... Well, if they've a corner kick from the right ears, who you're marking.
The fella was late getting on the pitch because the fella was telling him, giving him that many instructions going on. Now, this is a player that's there all week. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's coming on as a sub.
Having to be reminded
to do this, that and the other, right? When you're doing your training with a squad of 16 or 17 during the week, everybody's included in those sessions. In other words, if you've got two right backs, They're included in that. So if he does come on, then he knows what to do from corner pieces or set piece, whatever he might do. But all the players going on now, it's a big list. If you see the fellas telling him, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, I just understand what they could be telling them.
We might talk about Arsenal. They're currently playing. We'll get to score in a moment. But they were beaten by Watford at the weekend. They lost by 2-1. Troy Deeney came off the bench, made an impact, and then he spoke to BT after the game. Here's what he had to say.
I'm not going to be one to tell Mr. Wenger about himself, but there's a reason they lost, and it wasn't because of one penalty.
What do you think it was?
I have to watch what I say on the but yeah. Having a bit of... cojones, I think the word is. Having a bit of nuts.
I think you can get away with that.
Having a bit of nuts. Just having a bit of... Whenever I play Arsenal, and this is just personal, whenever I play against Arsenal, I'll go up and I think, let me whack the first one and let's see who wants it.
Yeah.
And I come on today, I jumped up with Mertesacker. I didn't even have to jump, actually. Nod it down, the crowd gets up. Yeah, we've got someone who can win it. And they all just backed off. So for me as a player, that, I just go, happy days.
You got a point, John?
Well, every player has a point. You know, when you win, you win. Everything is bad with the opposition. I honestly believe that somebody... Who was that talking?
Troy Deeney.
Troy Deeney. He only came on a sub, did he?
He did, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think he should keep his mouth shut and have more respect for the opposition when he plays against them. And look at himself. If he was such a great player and was able to do all the things that he's talking to other people not doing, he wouldn't be on the bench. He'd be out there playing. I think when you win, you should treat the opposition with respect and the same... When you lose, don't have to talk about the opposition, especially in a derogatory way. I think it's disrespectful to fellow professionals. And he could go out next week and miss three sitters on his own. No harm. It all happens to all players. So it's very easy to be critical of people, especially when you've beaten them. I think he doesn't have to make the comments he's making. And I think it's wrong. And I think it's disrespectful when players in that position make bad comments about players they played against and have beaten.
The underlying point he makes about being able to rattle the Arsenal centre-backs, about the Arsenal players lacking cojones, lacking a bit of metal that you would associate with the top teams, does he have a point there? And is that a real concern?
That's a different thing. I mean, of course he has a point there, because Arsenal, I don't think Arsenal do have the determination and fighting spirit that they should have. But I'm not a player. I'm not playing against them. I haven't played against them. I'm entitled to my opinion. He's entitled to his opinion. What I'm saying is, I think for a player like him, who's come on a sub, is not even playing regular in the first team, is criticising an opposition of players who have probably a lot of them that he's criticising have won a lot more than he's ever won or more likely to win. I think it's just totally disrespectful.
Arsenal, it seems to be the same old, same old. Like, they play Everton on Sunday at Goodison Park. On the verge of a crisis if they were to lose that game. It's been the same old story, not just this season, for 2-3 years now, that one defeat and everybody turns against them. When you watch them, do they look like a group of players who are feeling that sort of pressure, that there's no leeway at all with the supporters?
I don't think they're showing enough fighting spirit. I would agree with the lad who played against them. I think when you got Ozil in the team, you have Shackard in the team. I don't think these are good workers. Chamberlain's gone. I think Wenger's made a mess of it, to be honest, this year. I think when the season finished at the end last season, when they won the cup and just finished out of the fourth place, there should have been a clean sweep. I think he was in a position there. Sorry, Sanchez out, Chamberlain out, Ozil out, Zaka out, and make a clean sweep. Get a lot of money in for them and then spend the money on a new set of players that the supporters could say, this is a new start. Instead, he let Sanchez the contract situation. Chamberlain, he sold. Ozil, like, they're in a worse position now. Nobody knows whether Sanchez is going to go in the next window or Ozil's going to go. So nobody knows where they are at Arsenal at the moment. Instead of having the clean sweep, start again, this is a fresh start. It's in a bigger mess now than it was when the season ended. And that's down to Wenger, because I don't think he's handled it well. So I think he's under severe pressure and he's brought an awful lot of this on himself.
They've beaten Red Star Belgrade 1-0 tonight. Olivier Giroud scored 5 minutes from the end. Just very quickly before we let you go, John, the draw was made for the playoff.
Yep.
Denmark, are you happy?
Yeah, I think it's the best draw on paper that we could have got, Nathan. But that's on paper. What we've got to do is go and play. I hope now that we're not going to be hearing about the underdogs and all the various things that we hear. You know, we've proven in this, the group we played in, that there's no great team, that we didn't play any great teams out there. We're as good as any of them. I think we're as good as Denmark, as long as we have the belief now and the right attitude to go and to go and beat him, as we did in the last two matches. So it was a stroke of luck. Rather than get Italy and Croatia, obviously, that on paper, this has been, I think, a great break for us. And hopefully now we can make the most of it.
Here's hoping. Great stuff, John. We'll talk to you again next Thursday.
Thanks, Nathan.
All right, up next, we are going to be talking to Roscommon footballer Enda Smith.
Off the ball on News Talk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.